Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go in depth on all things Hawkeyes. This is Hawk Central. On Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO.
Happy Wednesday, Hawkeye fans, and welcome into the latest Hawk Central Radio Hour here on 106.3 KXNO, Des Moines Sports Station. We are with you from 6 to 7 o'clock tonight. I'm your host, Chad Lystico, the Iowa Hawkeyes sports columnist for the Des Moines Register. Back from a short vacation with my wife in the Appalachian Mountains. I learned it's pronounced Appalachian, not Lachian, Lachian. A place that my first guest, North Carolina native Tyler Tashman of the Des Moines Register, is familiar with. Right, Tyler? Did I say it correctly? And am I making Appalachian Mountains area people proud?
I mean, I actually don't even think I knew that that was the right way to pronounce it.
That was like the first thing they told me.
Really? Well,
you don't say Appalachian.
I don't know, man.
Okay. I hope you never said it.
That is good for, I don't know, they probably could sense that you were maybe an outsider and they gave me a little bit of a pass on it, so.
Well, appreciate you joining me, appreciate you holding down the fort while I was gone. I spent a lot of today just kind of catching up on things. It's a busy time right now. Even if there's not like a lot of stories out there, there's a lot simmering, I would say. Later in the show, We'll have Dargan Southard with me to unpack a slew of women's basketball stuff going on, including a new portal target for Lisa Bluter and company. But I think the biggest simmering topic right now in Hawkeye sports, Tyler, is the quarterback search in the NCAA transfer portal. You wrote while I was away that Brendan Sullivan was in for a visit on Tuesday in Iowa City. The Northwestern transfer, I believe, is wrapping up his visit in Iowa City as we speak on Wednesday afternoon. So, there could be some news breaking, I suppose, by the time we air this or whatever. But what are your thoughts on Brendan Sullivan, the Northwestern transfer, being in the mix for the Hawkeyes?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, first off, just the quarterback position is probably the biggest storyline of need for Iowa post-spring practice. And, Sullivan, just going through some of what he's done at Northwestern, 13 appearances over the last two seasons. He's 134 for 195 passing, a little over 1,300 yards, 10 passing touchdowns to 5 interceptions. Last season, he made some kind of spot starts for multiple games when Ben Bryant was hurt. And this is not like a flashy addition if I was able to get him. But I think it would be a really good addition because it's a guy that has some experience playing at the Big Ten level. That was kind of the real, something that really hurt Iowa last season with Deacon Hill in there is that he just did not have much experience at all. He really barely had any when he got thrown in there in that Michigan State game and for the rest of the season when Cade McNamara was out. But Sullivan's a guy that is played at the Big Ten level. The numbers aren't going to be eye-popping, but it's not like there's a ton of quarterback options in the portal, and it's not like Iowa's going to be able to pick and choose whoever they want. So I think that this would be, in my eyes, a really good fit. Someone that has experience, been around the college game. His numbers aren't going to totally wow you, but they're not terrible either. So, I think it would be a really good get if I was able to make it happen.
Yeah, the number for Sullivan that stands out for me is 68.7%. That is his career completion percentage. As we know, Iowa has not reached 60% as a team in any of the last seven seasons. The 3 years with Nate Stanley, the three with Spencer Petras, and then this last season. So that is impressive. I mean, I was watching some of his film earlier today, just to kind of get familiar with Brendan, and You know, he is more, yeah, he's definitely not like a big game, you know, big shot type of player, like, you know, a bunch of downfield shots with like this titanic arm, but he kind of checks the boxes of like, you know, making the trains run on time, which is very important for Iowa. And you can understand why maybe the new offensive coordinator in Northwestern maybe wanted to go a different direction, because, you know, Sullivan's a little bit, just from what I've seen, a little bit more of a, you know, maybe a game manager type of option, but also has some mobility. And that's also pretty attractive to me. You know, he did a lot of read option, RPO type of stuff at Northwestern. They did that all the time. And he has started the last 2 years against Iowa in Kinnick Stadium. In 2022, he was 23 of 30 for only 159 yards, but again, 23 of 30 and had two touchdowns in that game, and then was 12 of 19 for 81 yards and a TD last year at Wrigley Field. You know, so if you want to get a, you know, just go watch those games again if you want to get a little feel for Brendan. But yeah, like you said, the experience there, that is important. That, and that's if Cade McNamara goes down, you want somebody that has that experience, has that ability to run a Big Ten offense. And, you know, the pieces around Brendan also were just not good at Northwestern. So, you know, you can't necessarily shoulder all that, you know, pin the poor performance of that offense on him. They just weren't very good, you know, and they went through the Pat Fitzgerald tumult and an interim coach. And there was just a lot going on at Northwestern last year. He's 6'3", 225, you know, a bigger guy with some mobility. I mean, right now, to me, that's the best available portal target anyway. So for Iowa to have a chance, that is significant.
Yeah, and it would be kind of the epitome of the transfer portal if Iowa gets him and then their top two quarterbacks each started their career at Michigan and Northwestern, two other Big Ten schools, and now you know, they would be both playing for Iowa. So I feel like that kind of, even though Iowa doesn't necessarily really dive into the portal that hard, it would be just kind of the epitome of the changing landscape of things. But he did his best performance last season in a win against Maryland, 265 yards passing and two touchdowns. So, you know, that, I mean, he it's not like he's never had like a pretty big game. So obviously that was a notable performance. And then also just the fact that the five interceptions number, to me, 10 passing touchdowns to five interceptions, because just with Deacon Hill in there last season and the numbers that he had in terms of touchdown to interception ratio, just, I mean, it, for the way that Iowa plays, you need to hold on to the ball, right? That's what Kirk Ferentz is a stickler for. And Deacon Hill just did not deliver in that area. And so to have a guy that can just be a low mistake guy, really. And I know this is maybe not what people want to hear, but like, I would just need someone that's not going to make a lot of mistakes. Like, they, you know, they're not going to, I wouldn't necessarily say at the top of the priority list is having a guy that's just going to be an elite arm talent and going to be able to do all these different things. I think maybe it would be easier to kind of attract that type of talent 2-3 years down the Tim Lester era, if Iowa has success and he proves that, hey, this can be an offense that has some dynamic features to it. But I think it's still too early, way too early, to kind of gaining some of that momentum back, because we're talking about an offense that's really just trying to rebuild itself. Mm-hmm. So I think having a guy like Sullivan that can maybe be just a lower mistake guy, and he also, like, he has that experience, you know, coming in for someone that is injured. And, you know, ideally Cade McNamara is healthy for the start of the season and stays healthy the entire year. But as it's been the case the last two seasons, that's not, you know, a certainty by any stretch.
Right.
So having a guy that is, that has one, experience, but two, experience being a backup and coming into that starting role, I think that could be a lot of value for Iowa.
Yeah, and so let's kind of talk here, Tyler, about, you know, what a, you know, we kind of have, I guess, but what a Sullivan addition would mean for the Hawkeyes just in general, you know, as a whole. And I think you touched on a lot of it right there. Just, it gives you that insurance. If Cade McNamara gets hurt, you feel okay about where things are going to go for this Iowa team, because that was kind of what unraveled things last year. Now, it's not like Cade was great, but he also was playing hurt even early in the season. And then, you know, obviously, you know, everything went haywire at Penn State, but and then he was done after that. So you just need to be able to turn the keys over if you need to. If you need to for four or five games, you know, turn it over to Brendan Sullivan, a backup that has experience. Now, maybe Marco Linez makes a fast transition, but you just can't count on that. And so that's where I think, you know, adding Sullivan would be so huge. And you know, from from the photos, from the softball videos, right, Tyler? Cade McNamara looks like he's moving around pretty good. So that's encouraging. So, I mean, this would really add to it. And it almost feel like, Tyler, that like it's almost the perfect type of ad for, let's say, Cade McNamara's psyche. Now, I personally would love it if they had brought someone in to completely compete with Cade one-on-one. But I also know that's not realistic probably in terms of today's dynamics with college football. So it would, to me, be seen as a guy that comes in as your number two. He knows he's coming in as number two, but ready to be number one. I think that's kind of what you want. And then Brendan does have 2 years of eligibility remaining. And so that also gives you that bridge to 2025 as well. And gives him, you know, that's an incentive for him to learn the Tim Lester system, a guy that offered him a scholarship out of high school in Michigan when Lester was the head coach at Western Michigan. So a lot of stuff adds up there. You just hope, if you're Iowa at this point, I think that they can close the deal and that he can become a Hawkeye. Because after that, I'm not loving the transfer portal options right now.
Yeah, it would just give, you know, I think what we're both kind of circling around is stability. And just an exhale for how dire right now it feels like the quarterback situation is. It just feels kind of like, you know, a safety cushion, if you will. But in that, I felt like kind of is what the hope was for that Joe Labus would be last season with Cade McNamara. But he dealt with kind of the injury situation leading up to the season and just never really felt like he got his legs under him and then never actually ever got a chance. But Sullivan is a guy that has more experience than Labus, and, you know, I feel like maybe is more equipped for that. And then I feel like things in that room just kind of everything shifts into place more as it should be, because then you can really have Marco Linez and James Reaser in an ideal situation where they can develop, not feel like they're necessarily thrown into the fire way before they should be. So I feel like just at whether it's Brendan Sullivan, whether it's someone else, it feels like just adding that, an archetype of Brendan Sullivan, that's why I feel like he's such a great fit, but adding someone of that archetype in there just kind of feels like it puts all the dominoes into place in that quarterback room.
Yeah, agreed. That would just give you kind of that steady flow that you're looking for, because then you'd have, you know, obviously James Reader this summer and then Jimmy Sullivan. Sullivan, right? It would be two Sullivans. I'm not wrong, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I just thought of that. Yeah.
Well, he could, I guess. Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right.
Yeah. So two Sullivans on the roster potentially in 2025. So it kind of would be a natural progression and kind of start bolstering the Tim Lester room. And maybe that, you know, maybe that leads us to why they, you know, were, you know, Deacon Hill and Tommy Pucholsky moved on. Maybe they had a plan in place all along. Who knows? But there is another quarterback out there, Tyler, by the name, this is his name, General Booty, 6'2", 197, still remains an option for what I'm told. Put up good numbers at Tyler, Texas Junior College a couple years ago, 2021, 34-10 on the yardage. Then spent 2 years at Oklahoma, has 2 years of eligibility remaining. Another intriguing option, left-hander Sam Heward has committed to Utah out of Cal Poly. So that was another one that at least was discussed. So if not Sullivan, maybe General Booty, but I think Sullivan is plan A. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, Booty has a lot less experience. He put up some really prolific numbers, like you said, in junior college. The last two seasons, I mean, he's barely played at all. But obviously, Oklahoma is kind of a different level it is by far a different level than Northwestern. So I think, you know, he seems like he could be a viable option if I wasn't able to get Sullivan, I'd probably prefer Sullivan over him just from the experience standpoint, yeah. because that's where it just felt like last season was just such a, the deficiency was so obvious with Deacon Hill, just not having that experience, not having someone that has been in game situations and can kind of has gone through the learning curve of playing in college. And General Booty just hasn't had as much experience at the,
I'm sorry, I had to, can you picture Kirk saying General Booty at a press conference?
Yeah. I mean, maybe honestly, that might be why I'm kind of rooting for them to get him, but yeah, but anyway, he just doesn't have as much experience at, you know, at this high of a level. So that's why I would just be a little bit more hesitant about him. But, you know, again, it's not like there's a million options out there for Iowa to go after. So, you know, they have to get someone is the bottom line.
Yeah. No question. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I was just agreeing. But yeah, no, Brendan Sullivan, yeah, to me is the one, number one and 1A option right now. And Mr. Booty, you know, would be your backup plan at this point, literally. Let's talk quickly wide receivers. We only got a couple minutes left here. Jacob Bostic, remember him? He commits to Texas A&M. And after our last show, Missouri State transfer Raylan Sharp committed to Fresno State. So Iowa still kind of on the hunt for maybe another wide receiver, Tyler.
And that's probably priority number two, I would think, in terms of what Iowa needs to try to get better at following spring practice. Because it's right now, basically, you're looking at Caleb Brown, Seth Anderson as being probably the two top guys, and then you have Caden Wiegen. Terrell Washington Jr. has been getting snaps at slot. Some younger guys, Dane Howard, Jarrett Bowie, but they're really thin in that position group right now. It feels like there needs to be help there. Raylan Sharp seemed like a really good fit. He doesn't pick Iowa. So, you know, I think you really want to get another playmaker on the outside to try to help Tim Lester kind of get his feet off, you know, get his system going and moving the way it wants to. So, you know, because wide receiver has just been a major issue for Iowa. And I think, you know, that's where going back to the quarterback discussion is that, like, getting another quarterback kind of helps connect the rest of the offense. Mm-hmm. And I know that might sound really obvious, but for Iowa, just, like, shoring up that room is going to make everything else easier. Because really, I mean, as poor as the wide receivers were last season, it just felt like the offense didn't work because the quarterbacks weren't doing enough. You know, it just, Deacon Hill just wasn't doing enough. And that was kind of the simple way that Iowa's offense was just kind of failing, because then there was no threat to pass, and that allowed teams to zero in on the run, and that closed that side of things. So, and put more pressure on the offensive line. So, you know, if you can just shore up, if you can get someone like Brendan Sullivan, it feels like maybe you feel better about the wide receiver group in the offensive line, and you just feel better about the offense as a whole, just by kind of putting that one piece into place.
Well said. Very nice. And also got to stay healthy at wide receiver at this point, just how thin they are. All right, coming up next, more with me and Tyler Tashman, and this time on Iowa Hoops. You're listening to Hawk Central with Chad Lastico here on 106.3 KXNO. Welcome back to Hawk Central Radio here on 106.3 KXNO. Wanted to give all our listeners, especially those here in the Des Moines area, a heads up that the Polk County iClub event, the annual event, is next Tuesday night, May 14th, at the Hilton Garden Inn on 64th Street in West Des Moines. Football coach Kirk Ferentz, women's basketball coach Lisa Bluder will be on hand to talk. Visit PolkIClub.com. Tickets are $50 for adults, $25 for kids 12 and under, and you can get a table for 10 for $500. That includes dinner, and you can you know, hobnob with Kirk and Lisa and Gary Dolphin and others. So give them a shot. Also, this is a huge weekend for former Iowa wrestler Spencer Lee, the three-time NCAA champion, must finish in the top three at the World Olympic Games qualifier in Istanbul, Turkey, in order to clinch a spot at 57 kilograms for Team USA. I know Tyler Tashman thinks he could last more than 10 seconds with Spencer Lee. Spencer's going to try. If he gets the top three, he gets a spot in the 2024 Paris Olympics this summer. His first match, folks, is at 2 a.m. Central Time Saturday. So set your alarms or just stay up. Semifinals are at 10 a.m. Saturday on Flow Wrestling if he makes it. Everything on Flow Wrestling. If he makes the finals, Spencer is in. If he doesn't, this is so confusing. Wrestling does everything so weird. He'll have to kind of wrestle back to try to get third place. And they do a bracket based on everyone who lost to the finalists. Okay, so if you lost to the finalists, you have a shot. And they just drop a bracket then. And then if you lost in the semis, you're automatically in the semis of this whole thing. It's kind of strange. It's called repechage, which is French for second chance. So we'll find out if Spencer Lee is an Olympian by this weekend, and hopefully by late morning Saturday, you know, if he wins his semifinal match over in Istanbul, he will be. So pretty cool. That would be a great story for Iowa wrestling. Welcome back, Tyler Tashman. How are you doing? Did you like my wrestling talk there?
Yeah, that was very good. You had a lot of good information in there.
Even had some French in there. But let's talk some hoops. Yeah. We've got about 5 or 6 minutes here with you on men's basketball before we turn it over to the women. The biggest development in this past week while I was away was that Matt Cross, the transfer big man out of UMass, chose SMU over Iowa and other schools. Thoughts on Cross's decision and who is left for the Hawkeyes to go get?
That's a good question. It just seemed like Matt Cross would have been a really good fit, being kind of a stretch for someone who he would have been using. He's using his COVID year, so he's going into his fifth season. It seemed like a really good fit to put him with Owen Freeman, and obviously that's not going to work out, but Iowa still, I mean, they have at least two scholarships open, possibly three, depending on what Peyton Sanford decides to do. So they still have a lot of room to potentially add at this point in the kind of transfer portal calendar. But John Rothstein had reported that he had kind of linked, I'm going to try to pronounce his name right, Berke Butensil, who is, he's played one season at UCLA, didn't play a whole lot. He's from Turkey, so he's played overseas as well, but linked him to Iowa along with a bunch of other different schools. But it's been kind of quiet in terms of who else Iowa might potentially be going after. And I mean, it feels like they still need kind of some firepower, and especially depending on the Peyton Sanford decision. But there's definitely still room, and you know, as time goes on, the portal is going to keep getting you know, more barren. So.
So there's, yeah, good, yeah. Does not seem great right now, but I guess we'll see. Things have to play out. Yeah. Peyton Sanford, as you mentioned, is invited to the NBA scouting combine in Chicago. What does that mean, Tyler? I've covered some of these from afar. You just never know how it's going to go, but. Your thoughts on, I mean, that's a big deal, getting an invite to the combine. That is a big deal. So what does that mean for him?
Yeah, regardless of what his decision is, that's a great opportunity just for him to get in front of those NBA decision makers. And he's a guy that there's guys going into those types of things where it's like, it doesn't really matter what they do that much. Like, maybe they can swing their stock a little bit one way or the other. But he's a guy that I feel like he could really kind of potentially move the needle based on what he does. If he, you know, if he's playing in one of those games and goes off from three, and because the three-pointer is just such a coveted thing right now in basketball in the NBA, that could possibly kind of you know, raise his stock. And he's a guy that, I mean, it only takes one team to say, hey, we want to take you at this point, you know, early second round, late first round. Most of the mocks that I've seen, if not all of them, have them somewhere in the second round. But for Iowa, this decision really is, to me, the biggest of the offseason, because if he comes back to Iowa, you feel really good about what he can do and the team can do next season, and you feel like anything below a berth in the NCAA tournament would be a disappointment, barring some crazy circumstances. If he doesn't come back, there's a lot that needs to happen, because that's a massive piece of the puzzle. And I'm just not sure, based from both a leadership standpoint and a production standpoint, his departure is going to be really hurt for, is really going to hurt for Iowa. So a big decision coming up. He's going to need to make it by May 29th is the deadline.
All right. What do you think he's looking at? Like, I've covered some of these before, but give me a 30-second nutshell recap of, like, what does he want to get out of this to make that decision?
Yeah, well, I think the one interesting thing, maybe unique to this year, is that this year's draft is pretty weak in comparison to other drafts. So, you know, I don't know. It'll be interesting. Hopefully I'll get to talk to him next week. I'm hoping to be able to go to the combine, but if that, you know, the fact that, hey, this draft is not loaded, if that could play a factor into it, because he could maybe be a late or a early second round pick this season, and you know, he would put up the same numbers or a little bit better and be a late second round pick next year. So that's kind of a unique twist into his possible decision making if he feels like that's an important factor to it.
Yeah, that's a big one. Big one for Iowa men's hoops for sure. And obviously, you know, Peyton Sanford is a former Hawk Central guest, so we're rooting for him here on the show. And, you know, whatever it happens. But, you know, personally, I would like to cover him another year at the University of Iowa, but obviously wish him the best. Thanks, Tyler. Great stuff today.
Yep, thank you for having me.
All right, coming up next, Dargan Souther joins me to dive into lots of interesting Iowa women's basketball developments next here on Hawk Central, 106.3 KXNO. Welcome back to Hawk Central Radio here on 106.3 KXNO. Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register back with you again. And as promised, we're going to stretch our legs and have a nice long women's basketball segment because there is a ton to address and to handle that, to discuss that with me. I've got my trusty teammate on the women's basketball beat, Dargan Souther, also of the Des Moines Register, based in Iowa City, which is very nice for me. So we can kind of tag team it in Des Moines and Iowa City. Dargan, some interesting developments that we will get to with Kate Martin and Caitlin Clark that would be fun to discuss later. But first, let's talk about the transfer portal. Can confirm that Iowa women's basketball is firmly in the mix with 6'4" Arkansas forward Miriam Dowda. She is a 5-star prospect in the class of 2021. Had originally committed to Kim Mulkey at Baylor. Then when Mulkey ended up at LSU, she went to Arkansas. Last season, averaged 10.1 points per game and 6.3 boards. Would have 2 years remaining eligibility. Dargan, your early thoughts on Miriam Dowda and what that could mean for Iowa women's basketball.
Yeah, the wheels on this beat just keep spinning and spinning and spinning.
No kidding.
You know, we're a month after the title game here and still going strong with news and updates left and right. But yeah, I mean, I think the news there kind of caught everyone a little off guard just because, you know, they are at 15 scholarships right now, and that was maxed out. And so it felt like that the Lucy Olson ad was going to be Iowa's big portal get. But to kind of circle back and have be in the mix for now another, you know, pretty high-end portal get, especially when you look at the other teams that are kind of poking around trying to see what they can get, you know, with you, you know, it's been reported that UConn and South Carolina have both been in contact with her as well. So I think it's a piece that could obviously make a big difference next year. You know, you probably put her at the 5 and Hannah Stolke's at the 4, which obviously, you know, that's a pretty daunting front court. And on top of that, you know, as much as everybody kind of feels like Ava Hayden's the freshman that has the cleanest path to early playing time, she's still a freshman. And so to have a veteran piece, an experienced piece that you can plug in right there and, you know, maybe bring a freshman along rather than throwing her right into the starting lineup. I think that all bodes well for Iowa as they kind of keep this thing running post Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, no, long way to go, obviously, on Miriam.
Yep.
From what I'm hearing, South Carolina probably the favorite here, but Iowa is in the mix. So Iowa is competing for her services. Don't have any information as we speak here on Wednesday afternoon about a potential visit, but it would be the type of ad that you'd feel really good about. It's the type of ad, you know, Iowa almost, you know, actually not almost, Iowa did need last season.
Yeah.
That was the type of thing, you know, that they weren't able to go out and get. And, you know, maybe they won't get her, but I'm glad to see, Dargan, that they're kicking the tires on this and then some. You know, I think maybe this last season kind of showed them that, hey, you know, Iowa women's basketball is a thing. And obviously this last season just boomed with popularity. And so why not be aggressive? Why not, you know, why not be, you know, you don't have to make this a bridge year to new recruits. Make this a strong year. And I think Lucy Olson certainly starts by sending a message. And I kind of go back to what, you know, we call it a follow column. Like, we write our columns from the game, then we write another column, okay, or a story, whatever, Dargan. And, you know, so like the second day or third day story after the national championship game for me was, you know, Iowa in the future can compete at this level, but it's going to take depth. We saw that against South Carolina, you know, that Iowa had five pretty darn good players out there on the court, but they had five pretty good darn good players in the court and not much else in that title game, where South Carolina just hit them with waves. And the way this Iowa team is built, it really, with a fast pace, everything like that, it is built to rely on depth. If you can have eight or nine really solid players, they don't even have to be great. But just think if you had like a second Sydney Falter, you know, to sub her in, you know, in that title game, or just different styles of pieces. That to me is the long-term Lisa Bluter, you know, longevity plan to keep this going after you lose the generational superstar. And this would be that type of ad to me, because then all of a sudden your five spot looks really solid for the next 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the depth piece of how this program is constructed and what it prides itself on is pretty crucial. And, you know, I think there was some Iowa fans that maybe thought that Iowa's lack of activity in the portal last year was a, you know, a veteran staff's kind of old school approach still. But I think, again, as you've seen so many times throughout Caitlin Clark's years, primarily, this coaching staff continues to evolve and adapt with what makes it best. And so, you know, I do think it's significant that Iowa is still, you know, right there with some of these top schools for some of the top transfers in this cycle. And so I think there was certainly a natural worry of where, what direction this program was going to go after Caitlin Clark. And it was a fair question to pose. But yeah, I mean, all the efforts since the championship game show that the momentum from this program isn't slowing down anytime soon.
Yeah. And to go back to our radio show last week with Brad Heinrichs, you know, the swarm is a huge factor here. And, you know, I'm not here to tell anyone out there what to do with their money. But as I just want to relay that what Brad said last week is, you know, if you donate at least $1,000, you can earmark it for any sport you want. And I feel like he did say that women's basketball donations were up. And I think that, you know, the more, you know, momentum that you can get in that department and see the momentum turn into players, especially in basketball. Like football, I get it. Not everyone's going to pan out. But in basketball, you have a pretty good idea, especially in women's basketball, who's good and who's not. It's just you just look at the top 10 recruiting classes every year. Those players are all good, pretty much.
Right.
And so, those dollars really can make a difference. And again, I'm not any kind of PR ad here or anything, but I'm just saying that it's going to be a factor. And I think that's probably where the Swarm is a little bit better positioned this year than it was maybe a year ago, you know, with Anisha Morrow, Lauren Betts, those names that kind of at least got floated early. But, you know, I don't know what went into their decision making, but I'm guessing that Iowa just didn't have a lot to come to the table with at that point. So that said, that's going to be a factor in this whole thing as well. I'm sure about that. So how does it affect scholarships, right? Because that's the biggest question I've gotten pretty much all day.
Yeah, for sure.
And did go deep and made sure and found that Iowa can transition someone to walk on. So that is very easy to do. Now that has to be covered by, I mean, it doesn't have to be covered. You just wouldn't want to make the athlete cover it, but it could be covered by Swarm donations. Again, if you really want, you know, Miriam Dotta to become a Hawkeye, then, you know, donations could cover someone else's in-state tuition, for example. That's a lot cheaper for the Swarm to cover They don't have to go that route, but that's easily one route that could transpire. And we've seen that, and we've talked about that in football as well. So women's basketball has 15 scholarships. Men has 13. The only restriction on the 15 scholarships is that you can only travel 15 players. So you can't, like, have 15 scholarship players and, like, four walk-ons, and then everybody goes on the road. And everybody, you can only travel 15. And Ava Jones did not travel with the team last year. So, to me, the travel part of it would not be an issue. It's not like you're leaving someone at home in that case. So, anyway, it's kind of a non-issue in some ways. I mean, there are dollars involved here, and I suppose, Dargan, that somebody might, I don't know, balk at, like, being a walk-on versus scholarship. But, you know, the dollars and cents really, you know, it just comes down to, like, you know, what details, I guess. But it can be done, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I mean, common sense would think that if Iowa didn't feel like it could get the financial part of this process nailed down, then they wouldn't have started going after Dowda in the first place, especially knowing that, you know, I'm sure these other schools are probably bringing a lot of money to the table as well. But, just from, you know, I don't pretend to know exactly how all the financials work behind the scenes, but it feels unlikely based on what this coaching staff has shown and displayed during their time that they would leave somebody out to dry like that with financial burdens that they didn't anticipate. And really all it is, you know, what does it say you are on paper? You know, you got to say on paper, oh, this player is a walk-on, but if their money situation doesn't really change, then it's actually a way to expand your roster and, you know, get even more competitive because you can have, you know, one-off situations like that. And again, you know, this is not a something that
precursor.
This doesn't happen a lot, and it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, this is a precedent.
Yeah, precedent. Yeah, okay.
This is, yes. Even journalists sometimes go.
Yeah, that's why that's where we're better in print. But anyway, go ahead.
I don't think this is setting some sort of precedent that, you know, is going to happen every year, but it's just this situation is unique with the Ava Jones angle involved with it as well. And I think it's probably important to say that it doesn't seem like there's any indications that she's medically retiring or, you know, that's how a scholarship is going to open up because, you know, it seems like she's still pushing through and going straight forward with her recovery. So, I think it's a situation that works in this particular moment, and, you know, I was going to give it its best shot.
Yeah, and they've got, three, you know, of their 15 currently spoken for next season, three are, you know, seriously injured, you know, with Kenise Johnson,
definitely,
Aaliyah Guyton, and Ava Jones, of course. So you're down to 12 already. You know, there's a couple in there that you don't know are going to be contributors necessarily. And then a bunch are incoming freshmen. So, like, you kind of do need the depth. So this is the good, this is the type of time to use that situation if you can and make it work financially. You know, there's several in-state kids that would make it a little cheaper. I don't know, like, what the cost of, like, being a grad school, you know, maybe that would be lessened for an out-of-state kid, you know, like a Kylie Feuerbach, for example. I'm just throwing that out there. Anyway, they can work that out. But anyway, just don't worry about it. Like, I checked into it. Don't worry about it. Yeah, it's not your problem. Like, it's going to work out, okay? And no one's going to get screwed. Also women's basketball related, conference schedules, Dargan, did come out, conference matchups, I guess. Kind of interesting in the women's side that only plays an 18 game conference schedule. You only get one to play.
Yeah.
And then, I guess 16 one plays, right? Nebraska.
I'm sure it was pure coincidence. It was Nebraska.
Yeah. Nebraska is your partner in crime, and then you get 16 one plays. Anything stand out to you, Dargan, about next year's Big Ten schedule for the women?
Yeah, I mean, for one, it's just kind of cool to see a schedule with the new teams on it, you know, actually materialize. But, you know, I think you got to start with UCLA and USC coming to Carver. Obviously, that's juju for USC, and they've made a lot of noise in the portal and very well could start the year as the national title favorite. So that will obviously be a huge game and a big opportunity that Iowa have. And, you know, UCLA's coming back. You know, they're a pretty consistently projected top 10 team next year as well. So we almost got the Iowa-UCLA matchup this past year, and we'll get it in Carver at some point. And then one of the other things that I thought was cool is, you know, when Ava Hyden was going through her recruiting process and ultimately selected Iowa, I don't think she ever thought that she would get to play in her home state, much less her freshman season.
In so a conference
I looked
game.
It up.
Yeah.
Right. I looked it up. Sherwood, Oregon, where she's from, is about 90 minutes north of Eugene. So I imagine she'll have everyone nice. Who's, you know, just a million family members there. And that'll be another cool trip that Iowa obviously hasn't taken very often. So, I think, again, cool to see the new teams in the league and have them come to town.
Yeah. If by chance between now and next week's show, Iowa gets Miriam Dauda, I'm not predicting that or anything like that. Like I said, other teams are probably a favorite, but yeah, I could see season tickets being sold out yet again.
Yeah.
But a lot of excitement. It could be anyway with Lucy Olson and everyone else, but that would really ramp up excitement. She's a good player and would give Iowa some athleticism in the post, in addition to Hannah Stolke, who could return to her four position, which is what they want, ultimately. All right, we've got to keep going on these women's basketball topics. There's a ton here.
Bring it along.
The docuseries Full Court Press airs this weekend, all right? So four episodes featuring, Caitlin Clark of Iowa, Camila Cardoso of South Carolina, Kiki Rice of UCLA. I have not seen it, but we know that the ESPN cameras were following Caitlin and the team all year. We saw Connor McCaffrey being mic'd up. I mean, this is a total behind-the-scenes deal, Dargan. Caitlin even said she was like an executive producer even for this and kind of went through and cut stuff out and all that. So it's run by the Peyton Manning Omaha Productions people. Very cool, and I'll give you the times here in a little bit. But your thoughts on that whole deal?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's going to be great. You know, the effort that was put into it was pretty stout. You know, we saw, at some of the games that are the most credentialed, they'll have a seating map, and you can always see, you know, there's at least three or four ESPN camera people who are following her around everywhere, and so it'll be interesting to see, you know, what kind of little things or big things that come out then, with behind the scenes. And I think you'll probably get the best look at how Caitlin handled the chaos that was this past season on a more personal level, because obviously, you know, we didn't see everything that went on in the locker room and everything like that. So, I think it'll be a great thing. And I'm sure ESPN is happy to have it rolling out here soon.
Just in time for the WNBA season.
Yeah, right.
A funny story about that is when we were in Albany, okay, so they asked me to be on the documentary. So, but we were trying to figure out a time, and they wanted to talk a lot about the Iowa season, like especially late in the season. They want to talk about those games, like second half of the season, I would say. And so you'll probably see this in the documentary, but they rented an Airbnb, ESPN rented an Airbnb and had me meet them there on one of the days while we were in Albany, and it was like the craziest Airbnb I've ever seen. Like, you won't be able to see it all, but it was like insane. It was like this weird, it was just a weird place. It almost looked like it was like a, I don't even know what. It was just like this bedroom was like in the kitchen almost, and it was just insane. But anyway, that's where they talked to me for like 75 minutes. And so we'll see how they maybe they'll air like 15 seconds of what I said, maybe a minute, maybe like 5 minutes, who knows. But that was kind of fun. It was nice to be asked, but it was kind of crazy. I was just walking through some weird neighborhoods too on the way to that scene.
Airbnb hunting in Albany sounds like a task that could yield a lot of something.
Yeah, I know they were looking for a place with good lighting, and it was good lighting. So anyway, hope it turns out well. Here are the times. Episodes 1 and 2 will air at noon Central Time on Saturday on ABC. Episodes 3 and 4 will air at 11:30 a.m. Sunday on ABC. So all this weekend, and if you are an ESPN Plus subscriber, you will have access to all those episodes as well. I don't know when. Probably after they air them, I'm guessing. All right, WNBA, Dargan. Are the Las Vegas Aces becoming Iowa's team all of a sudden?
I mean, it certainly seems like it. With Megan Gustafson, and all signs point to Kate Martin making the roster in Vegas, which, you know, that's by no means a given for a second round pick, even right after, you know, they get picked. So that's a pretty incredible accomplishment for her.
Yeah, it's not done yet, but it's looking good.
Yeah, right? Looking good. You should say, you know, I think the WNBA teams have until the 13th to finalize their final roster, so, you know, in theory something could happen between now and then, but it seems like the things are trending that way. I mean, if you look at the Aces, a lot of their social media posts and pictures have had Kate in it. You know, there's been a clip of Kelsey Plum talking about Kate that's circulated, so it feels like that's probably going to happen. And the thing that I'm looking forward most to, I'm not exactly sure when the Fever and Aces match up, but and I don't know, you know, we'll see what Kate Martin's role is, but if they're, even if it's just a couple of possessions, you know, we heard so much about the Kate Martin versus Caitlin Clark practice battles and how they were often chirping at each other and have a lot of the same personality traits in that regard. To see a Kate Martin on Caitlin Clark in the WNBA in year one would be pretty cool to see.
Really amazing story, Kate Martin. So many layers there. I hope she does make
it. Almost didn't even come back this year.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she was this. I mean, as it's been said multiple times, I mean, Caitlin pretty much had to drag her back. And obviously, if she doesn't come back, she doesn't get to where she's at now. So, pretty incredible story for her.
Yeah. One last thing. Let's talk a little Caitlin Clark. Her Fever games are going to be more accessible than ever. 17 games will air on WOI in Des Moines. That's ABC and WQAD in the Quad Cities, with some deals that parent company that owns the Indianapolis station over there, NBC station there, that airs the games. So they're just going to air them here. So that's pretty awesome over the air. So her season will be able to be watched. I was on vacation when she played her first preseason game. Dargan, how did that go, and when does her first game in the WNBA actually start?
Yeah, so I believe the Wings play at UT Arlington, and I think it's like a 5,000-6,000 seat arena. That was sold out completely long in advance. You know, she played well. It was interesting to just see her on the court in different colors and with different people, because it's been a lot of the same names for the last few years. You know, she hit some threes early. I think she had 16 first half points. So got off to a good start. Yeah,
I think she had 21, right? 21 points.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, Indiana had a shot. I think they 4 seconds left and were down one maybe or two. Or no, they were down three because they needed a three. And tried to get Caitlin a look in the corner, but she was very heavily contested. So their next home game was going to be Friday, but it's now Thursday because of the Pacers series. So they play Atlanta tomorrow. And then I know they open with...
Okay, it's at the Connecticut Sun Tuesday at 7 p.m.
Yeah, and then the home opener I know is against the Liberty.
Yeah, on Thursday, next Thursday, the 16th. So that'll be fun to watch. All right, thank you, Dargan Southard. Appreciate you, man.
Yep, appreciate it.
All right, take care. Thank you, Dargan. Thank you, Tyler Tashman. Lots of developments you can continue to follow at hawkcentral.com. Until next Wednesday night, this is Chad Lystico saying so long here on Hawk Central 106.3 KXNO. Good night, everyone.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.